It's the KSRO Good Food Hour Leftover Show. Hi, everybody.
don't leave.
Don't leave. I'm Steve
Actually,
Garner.
the best food is leftovers, don't you think?
That's what I always say. That's the meal I look forward to the most. Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash in the KSRO Kitchen. I don't know, it's about our 38th Thanksgiving together, and I'm so glad many of you have spent many of these after Thanksgiving shows with us since 1987. And we both believe that the leftovers are really the high point, because during the meal, if you're part of the meal, it's exciting, it's wonderful to see family and friends, but it is stressful no matter how much you prep in advance.
Every
year there's 800 articles about, how you can do this all in advance. You can spend time with your guests. That's BS. If you're hosting Thanksgiving, there's a lot to do. A lot of things has to be warmed up in the oven. It's trying to find space for everything, getting everything. It's exciting, but it's exhausting.
Yeah.
And many times by the time you sit down for the meal,
you're not hungry anymore.
Well, you can't really focus and relax on it. It's a great joy, but waiting the day or two afterward when you have those leftovers, at least my wife and I have been talking about this.
What's your favorite leftover?
Well, we're going to talk about this.
Okay.
And it's so funny because when I was writing the promo, which we always post on Facebook and all other places, simultaneously for me writing this promo and sending it to you and out, here I receive from you, Chef John Ash, Thanksgiving leftovers.
Yeah.
So our minds are on the same wavelength. Simple recipes for your cherished
leftovers. Whose idea that was Beth Snow, who works with me. And she said, you should do something on leftovers.
Well, she was right on the money, because you're the man for leftovers. And I love the word that you use, though, cherished. Cherished leftovers. Not just leftovers, but cherished leftovers when you're too tired to cook. And you mentioned, so we're going to go through some of your greatest hits. And, of course, I turn to your book, the magnificent one I'm holding, Culinary Birds, the Ultimate Poultry Cookbook, with this drop-dead centerfold picture of a roast turkey on the front. Oh, is that gorgeous.
Yeah, isn't it?
God, was that taken in a studio or at your house? Do you remember?
I think it was taken at a studio.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. It's one of the most beautiful, really, photographs of a turkey I've ever seen. And this book's still in print.
It still is in print.
And you have
it won a James Beard Award.
A James Beard Award, not only that. And it has a whole section on turkey. So if you're like, what should I do with this turkey? Pick up this book, for heaven's sakes. It's great. So I printed out a few of the favorites that I have done over the years. Turkey mole. You talked about this a few years ago, and we made this one year, and it was really, really great. But first of all, a full confession, I didn't make the mole. I purchased a wonderful locally made mole from Hillsborough, Windsor.
Well, there's some good ones out there,
But it's a great idea to serve over turkey.
Yeah.
Turkey and mole, I think if you're not of Hispanic background, maybe you don't think of mole and turkey as being having an affinity for each other.
Yeah.
So you make this, and then blah, 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 the turkey, the chocolate, and the sprinkle with some sesame seeds and hot, fresh tortillas, some crumpled queso fresco, and cilantro spritz.
Yeah.
That's a dynamite.
That's it.
And you use turkey breast for that, or does it matter?
You can use whatever you have, but typically you use dark meat for it. So it's a great use of turkey legs and turkey thigh. Because they're a little richer in flavor, because the mole is pretty powerful.
It certainly is. Well, there's a great recipe right there, turkey mole. Some of the ones that you posted on your website, Chef John Ash, Mexican turkey noodle soup, keeping in the Mexican vibe here. So every culture has their noodle soup, whether it's matzo ball soup or whatever it is. So you mentioned it's a riff on the Mexican soup, sopa de fideo? Fideo means noodles, as you write.
They're a special kind of noodle. When you go to the Mexican market and you see them, and they're those broken up little noodles. And typically what you do with them is you fry them before you add them to the soup. And so that gives them flavor and texture that they wouldn't otherwise have.
Well, that's a different technique.
Yes.
I don't think the Italians do that.
No.
So there we have, like, it's made durum wheat and water, as you mentioned, and fideos prepared differently, as you just mentioned. They're the Italian style pasta. It's first toasted in olive oil. Very easy recipe.
Yeah.
And this is oregano, garlic, onions, some tomatoes, some chipotle.
Yeah.
Very nice. And then we have this fideos or angel hair pasta broken up into pieces.
Yeah.
Gosh, I've never made this before. And you add turkey right at the end and then
yeah.
eat that through.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you have your leftover turkey. So, and hopefully you've made people say that the most important thing, I was reading a couple of articles about turkey broth, you know, the carcass of the turkey. What should I do with it? Okay, I've cut all the meat off of it. Now I'm just going to throw it away. No, you're going to make a stock out of it. And it's one of those long simmered, and you don't have to do anything except put it in a pot with some water and maybe a couple of bay leaves or something like that and let it simmer slowly, slowly, slowly for a few hours. And it's the basis for all kinds of things.
And after you do that, do you chill it and then refrigerate it and then skim off the fat on top? Or what do you do with
the fat's that? Good for you.
But all of that fat you keep?
Well, it's been picked over anyway, so the fat's gone.
Oh,
so there's no fat in the bones or very little fat
okay.
in the bones. Because you're basically dealing with the bones. But if you want to, yes, you can do that.
Okay. Well,
if you're a
that.
Fat freak.
I'm not. I love fat, to tell yeah. you the truth. The next one, and I know this is one of your faves and also is in the book, Culinary Birds, Turkey Tetrazzini.
Yes.
Are you an opera fan?
Not really.
Okay.
But I love the story about this. It was named after Luisa Tetrazzini, who was a turn of the last century opera star. And she was, her big quote was that she needed to be careful about what she ate because otherwise it could cause wrinkles in her
yes,
face.
Yes, but you wrote, you said, I must not diet. If
yeah,
I diet,
exactly.
my face, it
yeah.
sag. I'm sorry, yeah. that was the best I could
yeah,
do.
Yeah, that's good.
So she liked rich food.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And this was some chef created this, a homage to her?
It was. I forget. It was somebody in Europe, I think, that created it. But
it's a great, great dish. Kids,
yeah.
kids love it because it's like mac and cheese, but it'll be better.
It's noodles, more
it's
noodles.
And grated yeah. parmesan.
Yeah, yeah.
And breadcrumbs.
Yeah.
And panko.
On top, yeah.
Or panko. So there's another one, the turkey tetrazzini. And I love this one that you do. Turkey and waffles. Why not? No one does that.
I know. Well, and the book that we're going to review today has lots of discussion of chicken and waffles,
mm-hmm.
but why not turkey and waffles?
I don't see why not. You make it the same way that you do with... Do you have a good waffle? Have you ever published a waffle recipe?
I don't think I have.
I don't think you have.
No. And they're easy, you know.
Do you have a waffle maker?
I do.
Oh.
I rarely use it. I rarely get it out because it's behind a bunch of stuff and I have to dig it out.
Gosh, it's funny. I never make waffles, but whenever I have them in a restaurant,
yeah.
I love waffles.
I know.
And I have a waffle maker.
Yeah.
Probably the same place as you keep yours.
Yeah.
Like, I can't find
yeah.
I mean, I know where it is, but getting it out and all that. I bet a lot of people are in that
yeah.
same boat. They love them, but they just don't
well,
make them very
or
often.
You could buy Eggo.
Oh, those are terrible. I have to say, I went through an Eggo period. Well, when our son was home,
yeah.
he loved them. I think kids and teenagers love them. And I continued to buy them for a few years. And every time I made them, I just didn't feel well after eating
really?
Them. Really? I don't know what it was.
But they have whole wheat,
yeah,
whole wheat versions, blueberry versions.
Well, eventually I went through the freezer and just threw them out.
Yeah.
I said, I never feel good about this. Now, what we do, and we've talked about these wonderful recipes, are two big things. The hot brown.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Which is a famous sandwich made popular at the Brown Hotel in Louisville, Kentucky back in 1926. Fred K. Schmidt
mm-hmm.
was the chef. And we used to have a gal who came on the show from Louisville who got the original recipe
yeah,
from Fred K.
Yeah.
Schmidt, a Kentuckian.
And we included that recipe.
So it's really wonderful. It's an open-faced sandwich, basically, of turkey.
Yeah.
And then
and
it
gravy.
Has bacon. And it's covered in a kind of a mornay-type sauce and then baked or broiled until it crisps up in the sauce.
And supposedly it was because it was created for all those people who drank too much.
Exactly.
You needed something to kind of sop up the alcohol.
Yeah, and sometimes pimento.
Yeah.
Pimento and some tomatoes are sliced on there. It's a great sandwich. And to this day, many restaurants in Louisville, they serve it year-round.
Yeah.
It's very, very popular.
Well, and you see it pop up in other places in the country, although I don't think I've seen a local version of hot brown.
I don't think I've ever seen it anywhere here, except when we used to do the big Derby fundraisers 25 years ago. And all the chefs got together, we would include the hot brown.
Yeah.
So there's one. You could look it up online and be part of Kentucky history. Now, what we'll do tonight at the Garner household is something we've done every year for 40 years, the day or two after Thanksgiving. It's the Marshall Fields special turkey sandwich from the Marshall Fields Chicago department
store. And what made it special?
Well, because it's just so delicious. So it's head lettuce, for crispy head lettuce, and then turkey breast, and then a Thousand Island dressing, which is wonderful. A slice of aged, good fresh cheese, Swiss cheese, and then some rye bread.
Mm.
It's hard to get really great rye bread around
here.
It is. But you do what you can do. And a little bit of bacon, and some hard-boiled eggs, a slice of tomato, even though they're not going to be great. And then a stuffed green or black olive and some pickles on the top in a spear.
Yeah.
Going through the top. It's the best.
What happened to it? You never see it featured.
No, not around, unless you're from the Chicago area, the Midwest, you grew up going to the Marshall Fields department store.
But now it's gone. Now Marshall Fields
now
is gone.
Now it's Macy's. Don't get me started about that. But it's really simple to do. It's an open-faced sandwich with that big lettuce leaf and the turkey. It's just absolutely delicious. And honestly, those are our two favorite sandwiches that we like to use. What time is it? Oh, my gosh. I don't know where the time has gone.
You're talking about something that you really like.
Turkey. And so I know you published the hot brown recipe in your book, Culinary Birds. Thank you for doing that. And then you also the turkey tetrazzini. And there's one other one that you had published in the book I want to mention is the Rachel sandwich.
Yes, yeah.
Talk about the Rachel.
I forget.
Like Reuben.
Oh, it's like, that's right. I knew that it was but instead of corned beef, which is what a Reuben has, it has turkey.
Which is wild.
Yeah.
Which I had never heard of until I read your book. But it's on grilled rye bread.
Yeah.
Same thing as a Reuben sandwich with corned beef or pastrami. And it also has Swiss cheese.
Yeah.
Also has sauerkraut
on
it. And this is a great change up using the turkey for this. And it's one of your faves you mentioned in this, even though you'll go to sleep after eating it with all the tryptophan and a lot of variations. So, and I also like this, that you substitute, if you don't like sauerkraut, use coleslaw for this sandwich also. So there it is, the Rachel sandwich. And now you can impress your friends by saying, well, don't you mean Reuben? No. This is the Rachel. As you can say, I learned this in Culinary Birds by Chef John Ash. Okay. Anything other? What other recipes can you think about? Leftover cranberry sauce or something? I saw a recipe. You know what I saw and I was thinking of making it? Someone did a cranberry upside down cake.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that a brilliant idea?
Yeah. So I don't mean to introduce scary things, but cranberries are in trouble, because we've had such droughts in the cranberry growing regions and the East and the Midwest and all that stuff, that there's going to be a shortage. So if you like using cranberries in baking, which you just mentioned, I'd go buy a few bags now and put them in the freezer because they're indestructible frozen.
Gosh, I did not heard this.
Yeah.
And cranberries are one of the best deals out there when you think about the labor involved in growing these and harvesting them.
But there's a shortage of them. There will be a shortage of them. So better get them now.
Okay. Well, I will do that. And you said that they're indestructible in the freezer.
They are.
They won't break down. The texture will remain the same. You pull them out 8 months later and they'll be fine.
Yeah.
You can attest to
even
this.
Even 12 months later. Yeah. 12 months later. It's amazing.
So there's something, I'm sure we all have cranberry sauce left over.
Yeah.
And that will grace our meals tonight.
Yeah.
And how,
and it's great on a sandwich. What you mentioned that.
On a sandwich. So tell me, I didn't even ask you, how was your Thanksgiving?
It was great. I did it with my daughter, Emily, or she did it. God love her. And my son Tyler came with his family from Texas, and so they were here with the kids. And
what was your contribution?
Turkey.
Oh.
My famous uncooked cranberry sauce.
Yeah, that's
gravy.
A dynamite one. You did all this.
Well, if you're going to roast a turkey, then you have the drippings.
Oh.
You know, and that's the best thing to make gravy from. So pour off the excess fat, whisk in a little flour, and then add the turkey stock or chicken stock. Mm-hmm. Works really fine with that. And there you go.
Season it up.
Yeah.
Do you add any butter or anything to your gravy?
Oh, of course. Oh, yeah. So what, you make a roux.
Oh, the roux. That's right. That,
so,
of course.
So you throw the you throw some butter in there into the drippings along with the flour, and that and make a basic roux and cook it because you don't want it to be, you don't want it to taste raw.
Of course.
And then add stock and cream and or creme fraiche is what I add.
Oh, you did.
And I usually add wild mushrooms. One of the things you can get. Costco has them usually about this time of year, dried, they call them field mushrooms, which are a whole, all kinds of different dried mushrooms. And those are really great because they're so flavorful.
So you just dehydrate these dried mushrooms?
They come dehydrated. So you have to rehydrate
them. Rehydrate them.
And then sauté them along with the rest of the roux. And then start adding stock. And
God, that sounds great.
Yeah, oh, it's fantastic.
Never seen that at Costco. So gravy and turkey, and what was the other item you brought? Turkey and gravy and what else?
Well, that was...
That was the main thing?
I brought some shrimp with a basil sauce. Yeah.
You did a lot of the meal. And it was a great deal. Great event with you and the family.
Yeah.
Okay. We will take a break. We will come back. And there's a new book that really caught our eye by Tony Tipton Martin. Just came out last Saturday, and we hopped on this and lined up Tony for a chat today. It's called When Southern Women Cook, History, Lore, and 300 Recipes, with contributions from 70 women writers. It's a beautiful book. And it's funny, I made a biscuit recipe for Thanksgiving from the book.
I know you're a biscuit aficionado.
Yes. Yes, I did. And the funny thing was, I have the book out, and of course I'm making the biscuits, and I kept whisking the flour off the book.
I know, I saw the same thing.
You did?
I thought, where did that come from?
It's so weird. It is such a realistic looking cover. Yeah. That it really looks like there's flour all over the book. And I did this several times. I'm like, stop this. It's a photograph, Steve.
Yeah.
So we'll talk to Tony right after this break. It's the KSRO Good Food Hour with Chef John Ash and me, Steve Garner.
Sonoma County's News Talk, KSRO, on FM at 103.5 in Santa Rosa and Windsor, 96.9 in Petaluma, and 94.5 in Sonoma at KSRO.com and on the KSRO app.
Hi, it's Dennis from the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market at Luther Burbank Center. I'd like to talk a bit about our market. Sure, we have great coffee, crepes, salsa, sausage, fruits, veggies, crafts, and much, much more. But to me, it's what you can't buy that makes the market special, and that's the people. You may have heard me speak with Steve on Saturday mornings on Garden Talk about buying potatoes from Tom or mushrooms from Barbara, forgetting to mention their business names. This is due to the relationships developed with those who grow the food we eat, something you can't get at the big supermarket chains. The vendors are a great resource to help create the perfect meal for you and your family. Bring your kids, grab a bite and something to drink, and shop the farmers market voted the best farmers market in Sonoma County 2 years running in the Press Democrats Readers Poll. We've been doing this for 50 years. We must be doing something right. So come and visit us at the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 to 1.
Hey, Sonoma County, it's that time again. Food for Thought's biggest and most delicious fundraiser of the year, Dining Out for Life, is on Thursday, December 5th. You can enjoy a great meal while doing a whole lot of good. It's simple. Dine out at one or more of 65 participating restaurants who will donate 25 to 100% of their total sales on December 5th to Food for Thought. Celebrating 35 years of service in Sonoma County, Food for Thought Food Bank provides nutrition and compassion to our neighbors living with serious medical conditions. Visit fftfoodbank.org/DOFL to find a restaurant near you. Food for Thought extends heartfelt thanks to River Road Family Vineyards and Winery and all of the sponsors who make this event possible. So grab your friends, your family, maybe even treat yourself, and dine out for life on Thursday, December 5th. One meal at a time, we can make a difference.
Agricultural Community Farmers Markets bring you fresh produce, meat, and dairy each week year-round.
Saturday and Wednesday mornings, 8:30 to 1, the tradition continues at the Santa Rosa Community Farmers Market in Farmers Lane Plaza. Coyote Family Farm is filled with luscious flower bouquets, tomatoes, and carrots. There's lots of local artisans selling candles, jewelry, soaps, and more. The Italian Corner offers items like mushroom and sausage risotto, chicken lemon ricotta ravioli, and a variety of lasagnas. Santa Rosa Seafood has fresh from the dock fish every Saturday, as well as specialty salads, cioppino, clam chowder, and local oysters from Marin. Jamaican Jerk has hot prepared Jamaican food for lunch or dinner. Chava's Pizza makes everything from scratch and bakes your pizza to order in a wood-fired oven. Tacos Costa Sonoma offers tasty tacos, quesadillas, and mouth-watering breakfast burritos. Mr. Dim Sum joins the fun on both days as well. Expanded curbside shopping service available.
Info online at ilovefarmersmarkets.org.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
KSRO Kitchen. I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash, celebrating our 38th year on the air. I believe probably America's longest running radio food show. Delighted to welcome Tony Tipton Martin to the show this morning. Hi, Tony.
Hi there.
Nice to have you on the show. It's funny, during the break, John and I were reading your bio, and John said, you know, she's been around a long time.
Yeah, I have.
We first heard your name many, many years ago, probably 25 years ago, with the Southern Food Conference, which both John and I have attended over the years in Oxford, Mississippi. And then all of a sudden you popped up as the editor-in-chief of Cook's Country Magazine, which is part of America's Test Kitchen. How long have you been with that operation?
Going on my fifth year. How about that?
Fifth year. Well, we love Cook's Country. It's a fabulous spinoff from In the Test Kitchen.
So this has nothing to do with anything, but Steve just gave me the official, what is it? For the New York Times.
The job description.
So there you go. So are we going to see you there?
Well, you know, I worked for the LA Times, which is probably where our paths crossed, John, many years ago with Ruth Reichel. And so I think my newspaper days are probably behind me. I'm on that other side of the horizon.
Oh, don't say it that way.
Well, I don't think I'm going back into newspaper, but I still have several books in me that I'm working on.
Good.
Well, this new one is a fabulous compilation where 70 women authors and journalists contribute some of their favorite recipes, some 300 recipes. Who came up with this great idea, and who did all the groundwork to solicit all these recipes, Tony?
Well, it was definitely a team effort. If you are familiar at all with one of the best known of my works, Jubilee, which, by the way, since you mentioned the New York Times, it was named last week as one of the top 25 books of the century. I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah, congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. So Jubilee has been sort of an incredible model for me and others to start to understand how we can give credit where credit is due. You know, when we adapt recipes and change them according to our audience or our taste or our family, those recipes just belong to us, but we forget that there was someone else who perhaps created that recipe. And so this book, based on my previous work, based on my experiences with SFA, was a way for us to demonstrate that America's Test Kitchen and Cook's Country are incredibly, incredibly well-known and respected for our rigorous recipe testing and creation, but we haven't always been able to identify the people behind the recipes, and this book gives us the chance to do that, do both. So I happen to have had an executive editor on the team who was really passionate about women and uplifting women and changing some of the narrative around women's work. And so she combed the ATK archives and was able to arrive at more than 600 recipes initially. Wow. Focused on the South. Yeah, it was a pretty big undertaking to scale those down. And then we used a lot of my contacts and friends over the years to reach out and give women a chance to speak in their own voice as sidebar stories to those recipes. It's great.
Well, I learned an awful lot reading this book, and I want to mention to you that I always try to do a recipe before we have an author on the air. And for my Thanksgiving on Thursday, I made the Pat in the Pan buttermilk biscuits.
Yeah,
aren't those phenomenal? And they're not, they don't have the same flaky texture that one expects when we think about biscuits that we get at, in commercial settings. Or maybe even in restaurants, but they're this really wonderful, slightly dense, crispy-edged biscuit that are kind of an adaptation of what used to be or is still known as a cream biscuit.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was a big hit. And by the way, I did, you don't know me, but John knows me. I did two biscuit recipes, of course. Because I'm biscuit crazy. I did this new one, which was a pat in the pan. It's very easy to do. And the crispiness factor is just off the charts because it's baked in an 8-inch pan. So you get a lot of crispy sides. But I also did my go-to laminated biscuit dough, which takes 4 or 5 turns. So you get multiple hundreds of layers of individual flaky layers. So
I
did two biscuit recipes. Well, so,
enough about me. You have biscuits on your Thanksgiving dinner table? That's awesome.
Oh, no, just two kinds of biscuits on the Thanksgiving dinner table.
I love the introduction to this book. It points out that there are more than 8 biscuit recipes included and 8 fried chicken recipes of different kinds.
That's right. And it would not be a Southern book without it.
Yeah, I guess not.
So all these recipes, we should mention to listeners, are always rigorously tested in America's Test Kitchen. Mm-hmm. Is that how you go through this?
Yes, that's right. That's right. Yeah, we have a beautiful facility in Boston Seaport. And I have a staff of, there are 12 or 13 of us at any given time, plus photographers and food stylists. And we take each recipe through a rigorous test. We might start with 5 or 6 versions of a dish. So let's say you wanted biscuits, and we would try different ones and see which one the team likes the best. And then we take that one recipe and start to work with it to determine whether we like melted butter or warm butter or a little salt, a lot of salt, table salt, kosher salt. Like, we just take a recipe through the ringer until we find the absolute most delicious, but also recipes that we have classically called fail-proof or foolproof to make sure that they're widely accessible to everyone.
After Thanksgiving, this is a perfect after Thanksgiving recipe I found in the book, sweet potato cornbread. Isn't that a great idea if you have leftover sweet potatoes?
Yeah.
I've never thought even to do that. Have you made this one before, Tony?
I have made that one. That is a version of a book that, again, was in Jubilee. There is a long-standing tradition in the African-American community of blending those two things together because, of course, African-Americans are passionate about cornbread, but also are very deeply connected to sweet potatoes. And so the recipe that we reference and the story that is the sidebar comes out of Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And there's a restaurant there where there are two chefs who helped us formalize that recipe.
Are you a native Texan, Tony? I know that we're talking with you with an area code of a Texas phone number.
I am from Los Angeles,
oh.
So I'm my south. My southern experience is based on Southern California, but I had raised my children in Austin and he back in Texas now, where family is located. But yeah, as you mentioned at the outset, those years as president of Southern Foodways Alliance really gave me a strong footing and a curiosity and a passion for. The women of the South, and this was just another natural extension of that work.
So what makes there's something about Southern food, and obviously you've captured it wonderfully in this book. What makes things Southern? Is it the history, which you include a lot of here? It's kind of a naive question, I guess, in a way. Obviously, it's food that comes that has its origins in the South, but there's a particular, I don't know, way of.
Well, that was one of the things that Morgan did a lot of research with our creative consultant, uh-huh. Casey Highsmith, to really try to clarify in a universal way what it meant to be Southern. And we, of course, used formal boundaries as one mechanism to help us understand that, you know, anything below the Mason-Dixon line or east of Austin, Texas, which is the absolute center of Texas and where the topography starts to change into the hill country and is less piney woods. So we knew we had the boundaries kind of clear. And then you read all kinds of descriptions, things like where the kudzu grows or where football is intensely, you know, people are passionate about that. Like there's all kinds of references to Southernness being a state of mind. Mm-hmm. But we really were able to hone in on some dishes and some ingredients and even some techniques that are pretty standard operating procedure within these boundaries. There's always going to be cornbread. There's always going to be biscuits. There's always going to be biscuits and sweet tea and a lot of farm-to-table consumption. You know, the food of the South was the original farm-to-table way of eating. So certainly these types of things migrated out of the South when people started to move around in this country. But generally speaking, you can kind of narrow in on some dishes. Barbecue, of course. Mm-hmm. Those are the kinds of things that are inherent to the region.
We'll take a break. We'll be right back. Chef John Ash and Steve Garner chatting with Toni Tipton Martin today. She is the godmother of this book, helped shepherd it to completion. When Southern Women Cook, History Lore and 300 Recipes, with contributions from 70 women writers from the Americas, Test Kitchen Publishing.
Sonoma County's News Talk, KSRO, on FM at 103.5 in Santa Rosa and Windsor, and now at 96.9 in Petaluma.
Honey, we need to make reservations for Buckley for our vacation. He loves going to daycare at Paradise Pet Resorts. Let's see if they have room for boarding.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, it makes it so much easier to leave him, knowing they'll take care of him like he's their own.
Paradise Pet Resorts will take great care of your furry family member. You get to go away, and your pet gets a vacation. See for yourself on the webcams. Just download the app and look at all those wagging tails.
Dogs are pack animals who don't do well left alone all day. They need plenty of mental and physical exercise, as well as lots of opportunities to play, sniff, explore, and socialize. Doggy daycare is a practical solution for keeping your dog stimulated, as opposed to chewing, digging, and barking when you're not home.
Pets prefer Paradise. Pet tested, pet approved. Book now for boarding and daycare. Paradise Pet Resorts in Rohnert Park in Santa Rosa. ParadisePetResorts.com.
Paradise.
Chernoff Cosmetic Surgery in Santa Rosa has been taking excellent care of patients for over 30 years.
There's such a difference between doing things to people and taking good care of patients. And I've been blessed in my practice to be surrounded by people who know the difference.
Dr. Chernoff likes to use the term your natural best when advising patients on what procedures to have.
Our nicest compliment is always to create their aesthetic improvement such that no one ever knows that they've had it done. And that means creating a natural appearance, never a done appearance, never a pulled appearance.
He not only trains doctors and nurses nationwide, but also ensures his staff receives training to the same high standards.
I am proud to be referred to as a pioneer in the field of aesthetics because we have been deeply involved in the research and development of many techniques, both non-surgical and surgical.
Check the specials and services at ChernoffCosmeticSurgery.com.
COTS, Committee on the Shelterless, helps our neighbors who are experiencing homelessness to find and keep housing, increase self-sufficiency, and improve overall well-being. COTS provides financial assistance, transportation, mental health solutions, and case management. Committee on the Shelterless, COTS, believes everyone deserves a home. For help or to donate, visit COTS.org, COTS.org. This message is a service of Ongaro & Sons Heating, Cooling, Plumbing, Electrical, and Solar, because we care.
Getting started in agriculture can be an uphill climb, especially when you need capital to buy land or equipment. That's why American Ag Credit offers financing to serve agriculture's next generation. Farmers like peach grower Gwen Cameron.
Myself and my lender, American Ag Credit, have a mutual interest, which is that my business is sustainable and does well into the future.
American Ag Credit provides flexible terms and loan guarantees for producers who qualify. Visit agloan.com to learn more. American Ag Credit, your future grows here.
You're listening to the KSRO Good Food Hour this morning. Thanks for joining us after Thanksgiving. I'm Steve Garner along with Chef John Ashen. Having a conversation with Tony Tipton Martin, When Southern Women Cook, History, Lore, and 300 Recipes with contributions from 70 women writers and chefs and authors. The book is organized in some 14 chapters. It's a big one, 500 plus pages, starting with the breadbasket, breakfast, eating with your hands from the garden, rice or grits in the stew pot, fried and true, sandwich icons, skillet suppers and casserole comfort, outdoor eating, flavor and preserved jams and jellies and preserves, everyday treats, celebration sweets, and southern sippers. We have to throw in a mint julep or two. John, anything you wanted to grab first of all?
Well, the bread basket was one that, which was the first, I guess, chapter, you'd call it, I really loved, and I especially loved the discussion about gravy and sawmill gravy and where it came from. And I guess it was, well, we should ask Tony, where did the biscuits and gravy concoction develop?
Well, you know, we made sure to invite 70 well-known but also emerging writers from the South to give us their perspective. Mm-hmm. And so this is one where cookbook author Sherry Castle, who's also a PBS television host, tells us about the importance of gravy making in the American South and that it's something that every cook should be able to do. Making gravy, we often think of it as a very humble combination of just fat, leftover drippings from a pan, some of the fawn that's in the bottom of the pan after roasting meats, and then a really, you know, it could be as simple as the liquid could be as simple as milk or water. But there's also the idea of putting in leftover coffee, which gives you red eye gravy. There's chocolate gravy in the South, which adds a little bit of cocoa powder. But this sawmill gravy that you were asking about, there are several theories attributed to it that go all the way back to the mountain South in the 1800s, and it has to do with lumberjacks and millers, and there are these kinds of stories that we make sure to tell through the unique perspective of someone who's a resident in that area.
I have to throw this one out to you because usually I just take my wings of my turkey and that, and I kind of make I just boil them.
A stock.
Yeah. I make a stock. But you have a recipe in this book for stuffed turkey wings, which sounds just glorious. Would you talk about that recipe for a moment, Tony?
Yeah, I have to scroll to that page, but I think that that might be one of the ones that we discovered in Louisiana.
Yes, that's right.
That's right. So we have we also have a column in our weekly magazine, in our monthly magazine, in our bi-monthly magazine and our weekly television show, where we travel on the road. So this book is also an expression of that and the recipes that we find there. Mm-hmm. And so this idea of stuffing turkey wings is really one of those types of making do dishes. We stuff lots of things in the South, but the idea of stuffing a turkey wing is kind of a make do dish, right? It's, you don't think about that using that bony piece of meat, but here these folks have been able to figure out how to do that with the absolutely delicious.
Well, I love the idea. You make slits in the wings, and then you put you stuff them with garlic, whole granulated both granulated and whole garlic halves, and then a little into the oven. You make a roux, soften a little bit of roux, and then braise it. And the wings are just fall off the bone. Mm. And I thought, what a great thing to do with wings.
So, you know, one of the...
And what I love about that is that, as you said earlier, chefs are known for making stock from various bones,
yeah,
and aromatic vegetables. But when you talk to someone in the South, you often get someone, a cook that'll say, they just put on a pot of beans, or they just put on some... some greens, right? And they don't talk about making this aromatic stock first. And so those bones, those turkey wings, might have just gone into a stock pot otherwise. Yeah. Or they might have been smoked, actually, mm-hmm, to further enhance their flavor. But here, this idea of stuffing them is really, really a stroke
so,
of genius.
So, you know, I think my favorite section, just because I am a great lover of breakfast, is the one called Soul Satisfying Breakfast. And the comment in the book was that it's something to be experienced in the South, in part because there are no mosquitoes in the morning and all that stuff, and you can eat
right
indoors and outdoors and all of that stuff. But there were we were talking about before you came on about waffles, and there's a great recipe for quick yeasted waffles in there that I really love.
Well, that's part of our homage to the Waffle House.
I know, which is chicken.
Identifying the Waffle House is one of the ways that people, that's on that list of things that you can kind of tell you're in the South if there's a Waffle House nearby.
So where did chicken and waffles come from? Do you know?
Well, there's quite a bit of discussion about where chicken and waffles come from. There's one version of the story that says that it's a Pennsylvania Dutch expression of, actually it was a kind of like this stewed chicken wing, where it was actually a gravied turkey, a gravied chicken, not a deep fried chicken. But most people recognize the story to be the recipe to be from Harlem, and from the pre-prohibition era, when there were people going to nightclubs and there would be the neon sign would flash for chicken for the evening, and then breakfast would be waffles, and this sign together would illuminate and you'd get chicken and waffles.
Oh,
and so there's one version of that, but the combination caught on, and I actually grew up with the combination in Los Angeles, where
Roscoe's,
a little restaurant, Roscoe's, made chicken and waffles famous.
Yeah, well, me too. I
more
grew up
than Wells. We don't necessarily hear about Wells, the original spot in New York as much.
We'll take a quick break. I grew up in Louisville, Kentucky, so I grew up with the Waffle House and the Toddle House. So to me, I think about those fluffy omelets and those hash brown potatoes very fondly. So thank you for referencing that in the new book. Tony Tifton Martin, When Southern Women Cook, History, Lore, and 300 Recipes, with contributions from 70 women writers, and a very lucky Good Food Hour listener this morning will win a copy of the book at the end of our chat. Back with Tony right after this.
Hello, Sonoma County. This is Will Cain. Please join me for the Will Cain Show weekday afternoons from 3 to 4 right here on Sonoma County's FM News Talk, KSRO.
Imagine a place where tradition meets innovation, a place where every baker from beginner to pro is part of a thriving community. Welcome to Central Milling's Artisan Baking Center in Petaluma, where this beautiful facility is more than just a state-of-the-art baking facility. It's a hub for lifelong learning and skill mastery.
With world-class instructors in a variety of classes tailored to all skill levels, you'll find the perfect fit, whether you're just starting out or refining your craft. And right now, use the coupon code BAKE15 to get 15% off any in-person class.
Artisan Baking Center is not just a baking facility. It's the farmer, the miller, and the baker all working together to preserve American farmland for tomorrow. Employee-owned and operated, their team is personally invested in the quality of their products.
Go online to see all the classes available, from pizza to desserts, baguettes to pastas. You're going to find a class just right for you. Use code BAKE15 to get 15% off any in-person class. Go to centralmilling.com and click on Bake. As the days grow shorter and the frosty mornings set in, the real estate market enters its winter phase, offering unique opportunities and unique challenges.
Hi, I'm Allison Norman.
And I'm Stephanie Norman.
We're the Norman Home Team. We're celebrating the much-needed rate reductions, bringing more buyers to the market and more sellers deciding the time is right to make a move.
We're also adjusting to some big changes affecting most residential real estate transactions, both buyers and sellers.
When you're ready, we're here to guide you through the evolving landscape with personalized service and up-to-date insights.
We know the market, and we're ready to help you navigate the changes for a smooth transaction.
Now more than ever, who you work with matters. Contact the Norman Home Team, the North Bay's newest mother-daughter real estate team. For questions or to make a no-obligation appointment, go to AllisonNorman.com. The Norman Home Team at Keller Williams Realty. Because two heads are better than one.
DRE license number 01720334 and 02209237.
Mom Fireplace Center, proud sponsor of the Golden State Warriors for over 10 years. Mom Fireplace Center in Santa Rosa offers indoor and outdoor fireplaces from Town and Country, luxury fireplaces for the discerning homeowner. Find your flame at Mom Fireplace Center, 368 Yolanda Avenue, on the web at momfireplacecenter.com. Mom Fireplace Center, we satisfy your burning desires.
Tony Tipton Martin joining Chef John Ash and me, Steve Garner, in the KSRO Kitchen. When Southern Women Cook, the title of the new book, History, Lore, and 300 Recipes. John, you had an observation about how the book is approached.
Well, the comment was made in the book that there is, the South isn't just, you know, what some of us think is biscuits and fried chicken and all that stuff, that there is a blending of cultures there. There's stuff from Asia, people who moved to the South from other places,
India,
from Mexico, all of that. I'm hung up on breakfast, but one of my favorite breakfast dishes is migas, which comes from it's kind of Tex-Mex with tortilla chips and eggs and all of that, but.
But, yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because a casual observer who flips through this book in their bookstore will notice that there's quite a diversity of not just voices, as you said, journalists, poets, chefs, farmers. We have covered the gamut of occupations for women. We've also got some surprises here. We talk about women in distilling. We talk about women who are pit masters in the barbecue world. We talk about shrimpers and oyster women. We go back in time and talk about some women who made their achieved their independence by selling fried chicken legs on the railroad. And so we have this perspective of diversity of occupation, but we also wanted to hear from, and of course of region, but we also wanted to remind everyone that this is a nation of immigrants. And that we all came from somewhere else, whether we all remember that or not. And our foods are a reflection of that. We often go out for pizza and forget that there was an Italian immigrant somewhere behind that dish way back when. We eat German-American food. We eat Chinese-American food. There's Mexican-American food. All of these are hybrids, and the foods of the South can also be a reflection of that. And so there are dishes that are more modern in their interpretation. One of the first that you'll encounter in the book is a fresh corn muffin which is basically a cornbread, you know, the classic cornbread with beautifully sweet corn kernels tossed in the mix. But it's served with a brown sugar cardamom butter. And we first got inspiration for that cardamom scented and flavored butter from a recipe created by Asha Gomez, who is an Indian chef in North Carolina, a restaurant owner and cookbook author as well. And she, the title of her book is called My Tooth South. And it's an expression of her identity or culinary identity in the American South as well as in South India.
We're down to almost the last minute or two. John, you really were taken with the sandwich chapter of the book.
I was, because I love sandwiches anyway. I think it's such a great thing to have to do. But there were all kinds of great ideas there anyway.
Okay, so sandwiches is a great, one of your favorite chapters. We're down to the last minute or so of this.
Can I throw out one other thing, which I had never heard of before, and that was Coke and peanuts.
Coke and peanuts?
Together, that you drop peanuts into Coke. But you were very specific about they needed to be salted peanuts. And that you had to be careful when you drank them because you'd only get a couple of peanuts at a time, and that you used a glass Coke bottle to do this. I thought, I've never seen that or heard. Somebody should resurrect that, or maybe it's probably sold someplace, and I don't know.
Tony,
sold all over.
Yeah,
Tony, would you give us your favorite number today between 1 and 10?
6.
Caller number 6 at 636-1350 will win this keepsake book, When Southern Women Cook, History, Lore, and 300 Recipes with contributions from 70 women writers, the foreword by Toni Tipton Martin. And she, along with Morgan Bowling, shepherded this project to completion. Caller number 6, 636-1350. Toni, it was a delight. It was a delight talking with you, and hope to talk again.
I enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Back after this.
Now, the left is shifting the goalposts, because in order to divide Americans from Americans, we have to shift the goalposts and suggest that discrimination is still a deeply active factor in every aspect of American life.
Ben Shapiro, weekday afternoons at 4 on KSRO.
Hi, I'm Sean Vong Pakham, manager of the Montgomery Village branch of Exchange Bank. Busy running your small business? Exchange Bank's got you covered. Welcome to you for a personal